Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to Exporting Malta. With me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is John DiGiorgio, who's the chairman of Sherbin Software. Now, Sherbin have been around, it seems like, forever and ever and ever. But you don't just do products and services in Malta. You actually sell your software overseas. How did that start?
Like many things, actually, almost by accident.
Okay.
So what actually happened was we had developed an idea from an engagement with a specific client.
Mm-hmm.
And here I'm talking about early 2000.
Right.
And from that idea of the specific requirement for a client, it was obvious that there was an opportunity to productize that idea. In mm-hmm. other words, take the idea not just for one specific client, but to turn it into a product that can be used to address a specific sector of the business. The nature of the sector and the opportunity was such that Malta would be far too small a market to justify the cost of the development of the product.
Right.
And therefore, by its very nature, it only made sense for us to develop this as a product rather than as a project if we looked beyond Malta's shores.
But what's the difference between developing the project for one client and productizing? How, if you already had to do it for your client, or could you have walked away and said, no, it's going to cost us too much? Or did you realize that it was going to be an opportunity for a product and therefore you may as well productize from the start?
Well, with software, when you develop a piece of software for a specific project,
mm-hmm.
for an individual customer, the way that you would actually develop that product
uh-huh.
is not necessarily the same way that you would develop it if you had a broader audience in mind.
Okay.
One thing which is a very clear example of this is, for instance, the support for a multilingual environment. So if you develop the product for a customer here in Malta,
uh-huh.
you wouldn't think that you would need to build the infrastructure into the product to support multilingual capability.
True.
Whereas if you're developing a product for international consumption, it's actually very important to think as to whether you are going to need to have the product supporting multiple languages. Because even then, the way that you would develop the product could change. You could take a shortcut and say, I'm going to support these following three or four languages. And you'd say French, Spanish, Italian, German, for the sake of argument. And each time you have a message or some sort of text coming up on a screen or in a report,
mm-hmm.
you develop the software to support those four languages. Or what you would do is you would develop the product to support an unlimited number of different languages.
And then you can just add them as you sell into different territories.
Correct. Now, obviously, doing it that second way is much more sustainable for long-term growth,
mm-hmm.
but it's more expensive in the development process. And therefore, depending on your vision of how far you want to take this,
mm-hmm.
you would take certain decisions from a technical perspective, which would be in line with what you're trying to achieve.
So how do you decide which of those models to go against? Do you go for the, you know, grab the big one and, you know, put extra columns in your spreadsheet sort of thing? Or do you go for the four languages? What did you do at that point in time?
Well, I think the textbook answer would be, no, you do some market research, you'd assess the different...
That is the textbook answer.
Correct. you'd do the market research, you'd see and try and make an assessment of what the market size
mm-hmm.
and the carrying capacity of the different countries are and the languages that they use. And you'd say, you know what, the likelihood of us selling this to customers who would want to see it and use the product in German, for the simple as an example, is much lower mm-hmm. than Spanish. And therefore, let's develop it in Spanish and support Spanish first. Now, in actual practice, that's not the way that we did it. The way that we did it is that we actually had a long-term vision. We were actually willing to make the investment to develop the product in such a way
okay.
that all the text that is used in the product is actually in a database to which we could add additional languages as the demand arose.
And so did that pay off in the end?
It did pay off in the end, because when we needed to support a language that we hadn't initially considered would be important to us, the only incremental cost of supporting that language was taking all of the text in English into an Excel spreadsheet, sending it to a translation company who would actually do all the translation into that new language, which we then uploaded into the system. And then the product is supporting that new language.
So
the incremental cost, the marginal cost of supporting a new language is relatively low, which then means you can go into a market which is not necessarily a market with a large size capacity, and actually be able to even make one sale and justify the cost of doing the translation for that particular market.
And so how many countries is that product? Integrafonotes, yes? How many countries is that product used in?
We have actually sold that into, if I remember rightly, about 24 different countries.
Okay.
In the case of Integra, the 2000 product, we didn't actually see the need to do that translation in the product itself.
Okay.
So we never did translation for Integra.
You just had it built ready?
We had it only in English.
Uh-huh.
We could actually support the languages, but we never really needed that, because the nature of the product was such that just having it in English would be sufficient.
And that was sold into places in the, you know, quite large companies, large organizations in the United States and...
Correct.
And
correct.
Other places. How did you manage to get into those countries?
Well, first of all, the nature of the product lends itself to a different approach. So the way that you would look to get into a country, into a market, there isn't one standard way of doing it, because it depends what you're selling. Are you selling a product? Are you selling a service? Is it an electronically delivered product, or is it a physical product? So the answer to that question in a broader sense would be, it depends. In our particular case, what we actually did was we chose a route to market which was open to us, because the product was a particular served a particular niche. And therefore, what we were able to do was to participate in exhibitions and conferences which were designed specifically to address that niche. This is actually very important, because the cost of marketing a product using a more shotgun approach, where you have a large number of customers, not very targeted. You know, if you were selling, I don't know, packs of tissues for the sake of argument, your potential market is everywhere.
Uh-huh.
That means that you have to have a marketing strategy which addresses a very broad type of market. In our case, our market was very focused. There were a number of exhibitions, 3 or 4 exhibitions a year, which were held in different countries around the world, usually rotating, which served our particular industry sector. And as a result, what we were able to do was to exhibit at those particular events and build up a client base as a result of being seen as one of the key players in this particular market.
And did it help to have things like, you know, accreditation from the softwares that you integrated with and stuff like that? Was that one of the other ways that gave you, you know, a badge of honor that people knew your software would work, being this tiny company from a tiny country?
Yes.
You know, is that something that helps?
Yes. When you use the word accreditation, usually what it means is almost a certificate issued by a particular company, say, yes, this product works with our product.
Yeah.
Very few companies actually do that.
Okay.
Because the legal implications for them doing that and endorsing a third-party product are far too great.
Ah.
Especially because, you know, we were selling to people like the US Air Force, to people like Bank of America, some, you know, big organizations, and therefore the legal liability would be far too great. However, we did get endorsements as a result of awards that we won. Probably the most prestigious award that we won was the IBM Chief Technology Officer's Innovation Award.
Wow, okay.
Which was, you know, as you said, wow.
I used to do work for IBM, so I know how huge that is.
Yes, so. No, that's a big thing. They issue three every year, one for Europe, one for the US, and one for Asia. And we won the one for European companies. So as soon as you get that, and you get the sort of recognition of the fact that you've won that award, and like that award, we won 9 or 10 other awards from different bodies, that then is a badge of honor, which helps a lot in your marketing and the visibility that you obtain.
And it also gives you some confidence to then be able to go on and invent your next product.
Also true.
Which, you know, I think a couple of years after probably the peak of this product, then mm-hmm. you invented something called CA+. What's CA+?
Correct. So CA+, CA stands for Concessionaire Analyzer.
Okay.
And it is a software product that was designed specifically to allow organizations to manage their concessionaires. What do I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
The concessionaire.
Looking at you blankly.
The concessionaire is, for instance, a retailer in a shopping mall.
Okay.
Or a retailer or a food and beverage operator within an airport. In fact, the airport was our main target market. And essentially, that business works in such a way that the shopping mall or the airport operator would, rather than lease out space to retailers or food and beverage operators to run outlets mm-hmm. based on a fixed rental, typically that market has evolved, firstly with the airports and then more recently with the malls, in using what is referred to as a revenue share scheme, whereby the retailer or the food and beverage operator agrees to pay a percentage of their turnover to the airport operator or the mall operator.
Okay, and your software manages that process?
Yes, because it can get quite complicated. So it sounds simple to say, yes, okay, so I will pay 15% of my turnover to the operator. Apart from the need for auditing and visibility.
And honesty.
And honesty. And therefore we need to control that.
Yes, yeah.
There's also the opportunity that having a system which automates this allows you to negotiate rates which, rather than having a flat 15% across all the products, maybe that you would actually have 15% on this particular product category, which is, take a news agent for instance, it might be 15% on water and chocolates mm-hmm. and confectionery.
Okay.
But when it comes to gifts, where the profit margin of the retailer may be higher, then the airport would extract a higher revenue share from the retailer.
Okay.
And if you have a system that automates this, it makes it more likely that you will actually build contracts which actually extract and optimize the revenues from that particular retailer.
And it makes sense for the stores, because they're not just paying a rent that then, if they can't cover the rent from their sales, they're actually, it sounds like a fairer system.
Yes. Having said that, there are still minimum guarantees.
Okay.
So there's still a minimum, independently of your percentage, that typically you would be charged.
Just in case no one does come into your shops.
Correct. So there's an element of risk which is shared between the retailer and the mall operator, or the retailer and the airport operator.
But why do airports do that? Why do they do this shared revenue, and why do malls do that? What's in it for them? Why wouldn't they just say, that's going to cost you X a month?
Okay. The basic principle behind it is there is what would be referred to as an upside opportunity. So rather than having a fixed rental, mm-hmm. you would actually have a minimum fee, which is a guarantee, which is almost the same as the fixed rental would have normally been.
Okay.
But then you've got a percentage of the turnover. So the airport and the retailer both have a shared interest to ensure the maximization
right.
of the sales.
So the shop is placed well, it does well.
Correct. And the airport has an incentive to assist the retailer to meet greater and greater sales.
So if it's not selling peach-flavored water, stop selling peach-flavored water.
Correct. You know, yeah, that's another aspect of what we did. So the natural consequence mm-hmm. with CA+ was not only that we were able to sort of control and automate the billing, etc., etc., the sort of traditional IT side, but we could assist the mall operator or the airport operator in understanding what products are being sold and to whom they're being sold. And when I say to whom, I don't mean to which individual, but on which flight, to which destination, on which airline was that passenger flying when the sale was made.
Because it might be that if you're on a Ryanair flight, you might be a particular type of passenger who spends, you know, little on your holiday, but then maybe a lot in the airport, or vice versa. You know, it could be,
Yes, there are some surprising insights that can be obtained. One would assume, for instance, that a passenger on a low-cost carrier would spend less because they're on a low-cost carrier. And therefore,
see, my economics is completely different. I think because I've got a cheap holiday, I'm just going to blow the rest of
exactly.
my cash.
And you're absolutely right. And you're absolutely right. You know, sort of, so one doesn't follow. And, you know, coming back to the internationalization stage, obviously when creating this product, mm-hmm. by its very nature, it was obvious that we had to have an international perspective for this product.
One airport and a helipad probably not going to do it for you.
Exactly.
No? Okay.
Exactly.
So how did you go about that? So obviously, do you just phone airports? I mean, how does it work?
Well, what we had an advantage that we did actually create a project for Malta International Airport initially, okay. so we understood the nature of their requirements. And then, by pure coincidence, at the time when we were actually considering whether to internationalize the product, in other words, convert this project into a product and then take it internationally, go through the process of rebuilding the product completely from scratch, putting in the multilingual support, doing a lot of things that you would need if you were operating in different countries, different jurisdictions, different tax systems, becomes quite complicated.
Yeah.
So we redeveloped the product from scratch. And with that process, at the time when we were actually considering whether to do that, what happened, again, this was luck, what I would refer to as serendipity, the annual airport commercial managers event.
That sounds fun. Uh-huh.
Yes. Which is run by an organization, which is an airport industry organization called ACI. They run this event once a year. And in that particular year, they happen to be running it in Malta.
Cool.
So we decided to actually exhibit and see and sort of kick the tires, see how people reacted to what we were doing and what level of interest there was. And we learned a lot through that. We also learned things that the broader market would need, which we hadn't anticipated, or that they would need it in a different way to the way that we had anticipated. So we learned a lot from that process. We actually did some market research at that stage also, and decided to go and embark on a new voyage, if you like.
Okay.
And part of that decision also involved us going through a branding exercise. Mm-hmm. And actually, rather than using the name Sherburn within our product, we actually used purely CA Plus, or Concessionaire Analyzer Plus, as it originally started, mainly because the word Sherburn had no brand equity internationally. So Sherburn is a pretty well-known brand here in Malta, but not outside. And also because we actually saw that the real opportunity with this product would be eventually to sell the product to a much larger company, a much larger international company, who were selling software products to the airport industry.
Okay.
So we wanted to actually go through the process of sort of building the product in such a way that the objective eventually would be to sell the product to a larger partner, so, to be acquired.
So important to get impact, get into good airports.
Correct. Build your reference site. But also important was not to call it Sherburn anything.
Yes, because you don't want them to buy Sherburn.
Exactly. Because the value for them to buy the whole of the company doing the rest of what we do with our 4,000 other customers is actually a complication for someone who is a company that specializes in the airport side.
Okay.
Now, in this area, what we decided to do, having learned from the Integra experience, we decided to say, right, how are we going to get to market? And the way that we decided to get to market was to repeat what we had done with our Integra product.
Because, of course, it's still a niche market in the sense of you know who the customers are.
It's a niche market. There are exhibitions, more exhibitions than our first target market, but exhibitions which are held annually around the world. And, of course, there are trade magazines which we wanted to feature in, we wanted to be interviewed in and have information about our products, and also win awards, which we did quite well. In that process, one of the things that we did also was we got a lot of assistance from Trade Malta, who actually allowed us to work with them to ensure that we could get to our market more effectively. So they helped us a lot with internationalization, both in terms of market research and also in terms of translation of our collateral, of our websites, and also of our in-product messaging, the actual messages and report headings that come out into our product.
Because, of course, you think just because you've translated it, it works. But if you're speaking to somebody, I don't know, in Puerto Rico, the tone of your voice has to be different.
Correct.
The wording,
the terminology,
all different.
Is different, and you have to be sensitive, sensitive to that. I think everyone's a victim of looking at a website, which is really a foreign website translated into English, and you read the text and you say, this doesn't actually make sense. So it's not a Google Translate type of thing that you can do. So we actually used professional companies to do that translation, and we were assisted in doing this by Trade Malta.
And what sort of countries did you end up in with CA+?
We ended up in a range of different countries, obviously apart from Malta, but also the UK, the US, in Canada, in markets like Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and also in, we have a number of clients, a cluster of clients, if you like, in the Caribbean.
Well, that must have been awful, yeah.
San Martin, Antigua, Curacao, Quito, which of course is not Caribbean, but in
same sort
Ecuador.
Of area.
But it's the same sort of geographic area within a few thousand miles. So it's all Central or Latin America.
But the beauty is that this product could go anywhere that there was an airport.
It could go anywhere that
a
there was an airport,
really,
a commercial airport. It could go to any airport specifically which is working on a revenue share model. Because it doesn't make much sense if you're not using a revenue share model. But at the time we did our market research, what actually happened was it was clear to us that the trend in the industry was for airports to transition.
Okay.
Malta International Airport was actually one of the first in the world
to implement
this. In fact,
I was doing some research and you see that they have quite a lot of awards. They're rated quite highly.
They are rated very highly.
Okay, so.
And they were one of the airports which was an early adopter of this type of approach.
And so did you end up selling the CA+ software? Where are you?
We did.
Okay.
We ended up selling the CA+ software whole operation because we actually set it up as a separate company.
Okay.
And that company was sold to a specialist New Zealand-based company which focuses just on the airport software section.
So you tick that box.
Yes.
What next?
What next is, well...
Having a break? No?
Well, yes.
Get back
and
to
no.
the Caribbean? No?
What next, I think, is a question of... the thing which I think is very important in business is what I refer to as opportunity identification. So I can remember with our Integra product, for instance, I can remember exactly where I was at the time when we say, we could make this into a product.
Okay.
Okay. But it's that realization that you've got to look out for. So you've got to be looking at the opportunities. You've got to be looking at the same opportunities that other people in the world are looking at, but you see something different to everyone else. So both in the case of Integra and also in the case of CA+, not only were a first worldwide, globally, in that product category, but in both cases, so far, we're actually the only product
doing what, that
doing what those two products.
So you're looking for the next opportunity?
Always looking.
Always looking?
Always looking.
You're not going to give us anything? No?
No.
No?
Well, yes, maybe. Well, okay. It's not so much of a different product, but with our Indigo product, we've have been very, very successful over these last few years in getting into the local market with payroll and HR and time and attendance.
And that's for more than one client in this case.
Correct. So here, this is a cloud-based solution where we started 2019 with 36,000 users already using the system, which was double what there had been the previous year. As of last week, that 36,000 had become 83,000.
Wow.
So the growth has been phenomenal. We've swept through the market. We're getting to the stage where we will be at a saturation level.
So here, almost everyone will be being paid using Indigo.
Yes, yes. So the issue at this point now is what next as far as that is concerned, and what we are doing is we're building additional modules which are people management related, so whether it's performance management or other areas which I can't go much into. Mm-hmm. But the other issue is to actually say, well, why don't we take this whole environment and actually take it to a different market, a different geographical market. There, the complexity is, unlike our previous products, the legal system and laws and reporting requirements for payroll, for instance, in the UK or Italy or Germany or the US, are going to be different.
Plus, I'm sure there are other payroll systems in existence.
Yes, absolutely.
So this would be slightly different.
Yes, it would.
But you've got a lot of lessons that you've learned through your other products.
Correct. And we've also got an exceptional product.
So.
That sounds arrogant, but
no,
it's
no, you've got to be up there.
Well, no, as you see from the adoption,
the numbers, yes, yeah,
rate.
Uh-huh. So we're going to be looking out for Sherbin taking over the world with Indigo.
Maybe not the whole world.
Well, you know, third time lucky.
Yes.
You know.
True.
So, yeah, so thanks for listening in. You've been listening to Exporting Malta with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week was the chairman of Sherbin Software, John DiGiorgio. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmelo Grech and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.